everyone, welcome to The Break Room, brought to you by Ashgate Hospice. I'm your host, Kirsty Cashmore. In each episode, we'll be talking to one of our amazing staff members or volunteers to learn more about the brilliant team we have here at Ashgate Hospice and the people behind the role. In this episode, I'll be chatting to Sarah Kerry, our Head of Day and Support Services. So hi, Sarah.
Hi, Kirsty.
Thank you for joining us. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Not bad. Not bad at all.
Good. Enjoying the weather?
Beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
So much so, yeah.
Apart from, like, say, the gnats and the insects.
Lots of midges, lots of insects, but good washing weather, so that's good for me.
So, first of all, tell us about your new role as Head of Day Support Services.
It feels like I got the job on offered the job on the Thursday, and I got the badge on the Monday, and that was that sort of off and go. And it's been a good learning curve so far. It's been really positive. I've been really well received by my colleagues, and that's always lovely. But got lots of projects brewing now.
You're just giving Dat a shout out even to Day Services, because that's where you've come from, isn't it? And we've had a fab new refurb, so tell us about that.
Yeah, so Day Services, obviously, it's where I've come from. Well, I've worked there for the last 9 years, I think it is, and slowly progressed sort of through the ranks into the manager role, which was just brilliant. The team are fantastic, and we've worked really hard to try and make the service a bit future-proofed, open to like different people, different cohorts of people, break down some of the stigmas associated with hospice care, and I feel like it's all come to fruition. We've had the refurb, and the place just looks beautiful. It just looked absolutely stunning. So it's been really stressful. It's been a big learning curve, and it's just nice to see the end results and to see people coming through the door and getting their first initial reactions is just lovely. It makes you feel like you've done the right thing.
Yeah. It's so strange not to see you in a pink tunic as well.
You know what? I like a uniform. I love a uniform. And that was one of the concerns when I got this new job, thinking, I don't think I've got any clothes. I feel I'm comfortable in the uniform, so I love my pink tunic, but they have said I have got a uniform coming.
Okay.
So I think it's just, yeah, it'll be strange to think I have to wear normal clothes a bit more.
And I still have a uniform even though I wear normal clothes. Yeah. In winter I'm in long dresses and Doc Martens, and in summer I'm in like linen trousers and a top, and it's the same all the way through, because I'm saying it's so stressful in the morning to pick out what to wear.
I know. I can't be dealing with that stress, so uniforms are brilliant for that.
So who's in your new team then?
The people that I currently direct line manage are the Day Services team. We've also got Amanda Ashcroft, who's one of the CNS team, who's seconded with us for 6 months, which is brilliant.
Fantastic.
Great addition to the team. It's Rosie Humphries out on the complementary therapy team. Mm-hmm. And Dawn London-Whiting, who's the counselling manager, and Claire Russell, who's the children's services manager. So they are sort of my direct line reports at the moment.
That is exciting. And Dawn was on our podcast last time, actually.
Yes.
Tell us about the counselling services, yeah. A little bit around her as well.
Yeah.
So we're going to find out some more about you now, isn't it? How long have you worked for Ashgate?
It's been 20 years in September.
Oh my days. Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah, 20 years. So I started on the inpatient unit. It was 2005, and I'd had my son, it was September, and I'd had my son in the November before, and I can remember when they'd offered me the job and everything, and I'd got to give notice up at Chesterfield Royal and things, and I distinctly remember coming into the ward, and I'd got Archie, so my eldest son, with me, and he'd come down in his little red wellies, holding my hand onto what to go and bring me documentation and things. So yeah, when you think about it, 20 years, it's a long time.
It's a lifetime of one of your kids, isn't it?
Absolutely, and it's sort of, I think that's one thing people don't always realise, because obviously turnover of staff in any organisation is so varied, so different, but I think particularly within sort of, I can only speak for Day Services, but we've got I've got somebody who's just reached 30 years service. I've got somebody else who early next year has got 30 years service. I've got another one who's just 20 years service last year. We're a long-standing hospice team.
Yeah.
And I have to say, we often talk about it and say that it is well and truly ingrained in our lives. You know, it's just our children have grown up with us working here, our relationships have developed whilst we've been working here. So it is just a part of your life story, really. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
Really nice to reflect on sometimes.
That's lovely to think of it that way as well. I only hope I can be here for like another 20 years and or reach 30 years. If you put you in half and like a sticker rock, you would just have like Ashgate printed on the inside.
Pretty much. And it's daft because it's everything. It's like, you know, if you do any kind of fundraising thing, you know it's going to come here. Mm. Charity shop donations, they're all going to come here. It's all just always been a part of our life. And yeah, it's just how it is.
So in that 20 years then, what is your most memorable moment?
Do you know what? I probably couldn't even say, but we often say we need to write a book because some of the stories are unreal and they're so funny. And I think that is just the luxury of working with people and the sort of the stories and the foibles that they bring. I couldn't honestly pin it down to one. And to be fair, it probably wouldn't even be sort of publishable anyway. I think that's one thing I've learned about sort of working in hospice care and working even on the board and things, you know. You're dealing with people that have been through so much that are, you know, they've, a lot of the time, their inhibitions are well gone out the door, and they are more than happy to speak very openly and honestly. And I love it, but yeah, probably not all for everyday viewing, let me say.
So, heads up, folks, if we ever get a book announcement come out saying that a book about hospice care has been written anonymously, then, you know, let's all look at Sarah first.
Yeah. We've got a title, we're going to call it the Hospice Girls, that's what we're going to call it. It is something that we've always sort of joked about because there's so many stories amongst the team.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Oh, I'm gagging to read that. Have you got any funny moments then?
Always funny moments. It's things like there's a lot of laughter in hospice care, which I think a lot of people don't realise that. Yeah. There's a lot of laughter, and my colleague from would always say, you know, you get lots of comments, people saying, oh, isn't it a sad place to work, isn't it this? And the reality is, we wouldn't have been here for the length of time we had if it was so. Yeah. It's just a place to work. It's because there's a lot of laughter. There's been all sorts. A lot of adult humour happens in that space. But generally speaking, it's a lot of laughter. Just good fun.
How do I get into day services?
I know. It's a place to be. As long as you're not easily offended, I think, sometimes. Yeah, you've got to be able to take a bit of ribbing. But, yes, it's just... There's lots of stories. So much love has gone, you know, in that room. So much laughter and... It's just life, people's lives. We're so honoured to be able to sort of just get a little glimpse of it. It's lovely, really lovely.
What is something some people might be surprised to learn about you?
I am a bit of an open book. I ain't got many secrets because I can't keep them very well. So
I have to tell everybody, don't tell Sarah anything.
I'm not very good. I'm all right with other people's, but my own secrets I'm not very good at. I don't really know. I know I often get asked to write a family tree because I have got such a higgledy-piggledy family, and I think it's just because of divorces and remarriages and stepfamilies and things. So you know, I've got a lot of siblings from different marriages and things. And we've recently been introduced to another sister, so my oldest sister on my mum's side, who was she was adopted when she was young. So she's been reintroduced to family Lucy, which is lovely. So it's the first time meeting her, so probably about a year ago.
Wow.
So it's things like that. You know, you think there's a lot of, you see these stories and you work in these stories, you know, and I've heard it. But actually, when you start looking at your own life, you think, yeah, actually, I'm not far behind them, really. I've got loads of stuff that's the, you know. So yeah, we've got quite a lot of siblings, a lot of family down in, and yeah, it's lovely.
I love that. Hmm. So any big gatherings planned, all of you together?
I say that because we are, you know, I've got a lot of family, but it's one of those things, I don't see a lot of any of them. So my stepbrothers, one's in Spain, one's in Sheffield, which isn't far away, but I think it's just because of life. We sort of get together, as awful as it sounds, it's normally weddings and funerals. Mm. It's just life and families and things. Stay in touch, but no, family gatherings, I have to say, we don't do many at all, really.
Any unusual skills that you've got?
See, I did used to play the kazoo. I was in the kazoo. I was in a marching band. So I was in a marching band, Tucked and Telstars it was.
Oh.
Yeah. And I was basically pretty much crap at everything. I was sort of, I wanted to be in the kazoo group because they did all the like the dance moves to go with the music. And I couldn't play the kazoo, which is basically, you don't really need a lot of skill to play the kazoo. but I couldn't do it.
Can you describe what it is and what
it looks like? A funny shaped thing, like a trumpet shaped thing, but you literally all you do is blow through it and it just makes a funny trumpet sound, but there's nothing to press, there's nothing you need to do to make, you just have to blow in it. Sometimes you'll see it, but like football
stadiums. Yeah, oh, that's what I was thinking of. Yeah.
So I'm sure there's people out there that can play the profession, and I'm sure that they are highly skilled. That was definitely a skill that passed me by. As was sort of anything like, you know, where they were like dancing, trying to coordinate dance. I couldn't do that. That wasn't my thing. So they basically gave me, I think they went rifling through sort of the instrument box and just found something out, and it's called a cabasa, and that was something that got a wooden thing, like almost a bit like a mallet but round, got a handle on it, and got loads of beads around it, metal beads, and so you twist it and shake it, and I won medals for that cabasa.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and I think it's because I basically just had to stick to the rhythm and march in a straight line, and I mastered it. I did that.
I'm just going back to primary school then, because I know exactly what you mean.
So, like I say, skill-wise, I'm not a musician, and which is funny, because a lot of my family, a lot of my siblings that I've just spoke about are very talented, very arty, very, you know, musicians, talented, you know, really talented in that kind of way. That's completely passed me by.
Skipped a generation.
Yeah. So Sean, obviously my stepbrother, I know there's no biology there or such, but we grew up together. He's got a PhD in chemical science. Again, that completely passed me by. So it's sort of, there's just certain elements that you look at family and think, yeah, I'm not sure what bits I inherited. I mean, I'm not doing bad, but it weren't half the stuff that came. I feel like they got all the good bits and I've sort of made do with what I've got. And one of those was the cabasa.
Imagining you in this band uniform. Yeah. Your cabasa, just walking in the street, like, really concentrating.
Yeah. And I got medals for it. I did. I won prizes for that. So, yeah, skilled.
Well, that leads me nicely on to my next question then. Are there any skills that you would like to master? Maybe the kazoo, or are there any others?
No, I think I've well and truly outdone the kazoo element. I think I've moved on. There's all sorts of bits and stuff, but it's normally day-to-day things. Like, we live next door to an allotment. We've just been sort of told, been on the list for ages, we live where we are for about 10 years now, and we've always said we'd like an allotment when one comes available. Anyway, literally about 3 weeks ago, we were told there's a plot available. Brilliant, no problem, went and signed for it. And I look at them, and some of them are so well kept. And, you know, they look beautiful, don't they? Yeah. They look really functional, productive, but actually beautiful. They're like works of art. And that is something that I have to say. I look at it and I think, I ain't got time for this, you know, as if life ain't busy enough. But that is a skill. I'd love to be able to garden and grow things and just, you know, make something beautiful out of that space. I mean, to be honest, it looks quite nice as it is, because I quite like stuff overgrown, really. I like nature and I like to see things like that. But yeah, I do get a bit envious when I see people's allotment plots. I'd love to know more about gardening and also have the energy and the time to be able to do it.
Well, yeah, there is that. But maybe you could amalgamate things together, because we've got a fantastic group of volunteer gardeners here. We could pick the brains off.
We do. In fact, Amy has just been working with one of the volunteers. He's basically done her a spreadsheet of all the planting flowers, and so that it's on Excel.
Yeah.
So she can do it through colour, through month, through winter. Honestly, it's a piece of it's just amazing. So I think to have that amount of knowledge about something, that would be just really quite appealing.
Yeah, that's impressive, that.
Yeah, so I'm sure she'd share with you if you're interested.
I'm very interested. I'm sure other people would be interested as well.
Yes, it's a piece of art.
You've mentioned how busy life is and how life just gets in the way of all sorts. How do you unwind? Is it going to be at your allotment?
Probably not. So I'm very lucky in that I've got my own horse. He's my baby. So he's only three. And I've always had horses, always. It's something that my mum's instilled in me from a very young age, because mum was always passionate about it. So it was one of those things that, you know, when parents worked very hard to enable me and sister to have those opportunities. And so it was something that I kept up, and my sister didn't really.
Yeah.
So it was just lovely lovely way to spend the weekends, sort of Uptown Easing, Horsemook and Morecambe, things like that. Probably not much different now, really. So, yeah, that's what I do. So I go every morning and I go every evening. So before work, I'm up there sorting them out, turning them out, things like that. And that sets me up for the day. And then I'm there after work. To be honest, as soon as I step foot out the door, I leave work at work. Mm-hmm. It's very rare I take work home with me. And often what I need is a bit of blue sky and a bit of greenery and being up at stables or out in the field.
Would you say you're solar powered, so you're only happy or energy when the sun comes out?
It doesn't even have to be sunny, you know, because I'm not very good in hot weather. My skin is generally, I'm like blue by default. Like, I go on holiday and I put a bit of fake tan on before I go. And you can see as my holiday photos go on, I get paler and paler. It's my fake tan before I go. So often when I'm going, I'm browner than I am when I come back because I don't sunbathe. I find that I'm sort of shade bathing, and my Ralph Anthony, he loves sunbathing. So as the day goes on, we gradually get further and further apart because he goes to like the sun and I'm chasing the shade. And so yeah, I generally come back paler. So it's not so much the sunshine, but I'm happiest outdoors. I do love being outside. I don't care what the weather is, really. I don't really mind. I do need that outside space.
Yeah.
I love a window.
Yeah.
Very distracted by a view.
Yes.
But the thought of sort of being in a space where I've got no access to daylight, or I don't like that.
No. Have you always been like that? Like being able to just leave everything at the door after work and not take work home with you? Or is that something you've had to learn?
No, I think it's something I've always been quite good at. I think one of the situations before I worked here, I did work up at Chesterfield Royal on one of the medical wards up there. Loved it, loved my job. And then when I was pregnant with Archie and I'd sort of had Archie, I went back to work. And because basically he was late, he only got 6 months maternity leave anyway at that point. So I was back at work with the breastfeeding baby when he was 4 months old.
Wow.
So I was sort of back doing shift work and night shifts and everything. And it's just what you did then, really. There was no really alternative option. And my manager was really supportive in that she'd try and work shifts so it suited us and things. But I distinctly remember going home from like that, which it was a 34-bedded medical ward. It was busy. There was lots sort of coming and going. I was always at my happiest when I was in the acute end of the bay. You know, I liked bay one, where generally the poorliers would be. But I did notice when, after having Archie and sort of going home and realising I wasn't really functioning on all cylinders at all. I was just knackered, basically. I think I was just exhausted. And I'd sit there and I'd perhaps be feeding him, I don't know, maybe 2 or 3 in the morning. And it was always normally quite a peaceful time, but I do remember there being a period where I'd be thinking, did I give that antibiotic to the right person? And I sort of thought, this is not right, Sarah, this is not right. And that's when I started, not actively looking for the jobs, but one of my friends had come to work down here and said that they're advertising again. It's just, you'd love it. And that's when I moved down here and got the job here and stayed, you know. So there have been periods in my life where it's been like that, but I think I'm quite good at, probably, I don't know if you call it compartmentalising or what have you, but my life's in sort of boxes, really. So my horse stuff is, that's my thing, and certain friends don't mix with that part of my life, and that's fine. I've got other friends that are for, you know, afternoon cocktails. I've got other friends that are for, you know, walks in the, you know what I mean, hiking. Yeah, I've got different aspects of life that, you know, sit at different times, and work is one box.
Yeah.
And it just so happens that my work, I really enjoy it. It's a big part of your life, isn't it? But I've got a lot of friends at work as well.
Mm.
So there's a lot of friends, colleagues, support. And I think it's just, yeah, something I've always managed quite well.
Good for you, that, because I think that's something that a lot of people struggle with, just in general, let alone when working this environment as well.
I sometimes think it's because it's this environment. I think by the time people come to you, some people that you look at, you know, that you're supporting or what have you, they've had that process of going through things and questioning what they've done with their life and their life choices and what they want for the future. And you can't help but have an element of that sort of rub off on you and think, well, actually, we need to prioritise what
yeah.
is important to you, prioritise what you get pleasure from. And I mean, you know.
Different perspective as well, yes. I suppose, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And it's not always the same, you know. Sometimes, you know, you listen to people and you think, I shouldn't be moaning about the fact that someone's not cleaning the microwave when there's people out there that have got a diagnosis that they can't do anything about. But that's your life's reality, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's easy to sit there and say, if that's the only thing you've got to worry about, then you're not doing bad. But everybody's reality is different.
Yes.
And I think just because, you know, someone's saying that I'm in a very fortunate position, then that's fine, but it doesn't mean to say that I still don't get frustrated about things, or, you know, hate the fact that I spend 3 or 4 hours cleaning on the weekend, or, you know what I mean? Because that is my life, that's my reality, so.
That's just really profound. Let's go back 20 years then. It's your first day at Ashgate. Knowing what you know now, what is the bit of advice you would give to yourself?
Somebody gave me advice there and then, because I wasn't sure it was for me. I'd, like I say, very busy medical ward, very different way of working. And somebody then said, you need to give it at least 6 months.
Mm.
You can't make your mind up over, because it was a very big change to what I was used to. And I think I say that to anybody now that starts a new job. You've got to realistically, or even try to implement any changes or service developments. And I think we're so used to wanting everything now. You know, when you look at Amazon, you're ordering, it can be there in 24 hours. You know what I mean? We're used to that instantaneous results. And I think the reality is, when you're working with people and you're looking at implementing things and changing things, you can't expect it to be that quick. You've got to give yourself time, and you've got to be really patient. And so that was, yeah, that has stayed with me. That, and I would recommend the same to everybody, give it at least 6 months to a year. If you can afford to, if it's not impacting you personally in a negative way, stick it out. And then you can make an informed choice then, can't you?
And it's so true what you're saying. We're so impulsive, aren't we, these days? Because, like I say, everything is there, just at the drop of a hat. I think it's making us very impatient.
I think it makes us very impatient. I'm as bad as anybody. You know, I hate waiting for a parcel. I hate waiting in for things. But I do think sometimes time is a really good tell as well. I think it's, you know, you can have the best idea in the world, but the reality is, if it's still not relevant in 3-4 weeks' time, is it the best idea in the world?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You've just got to think, right, that's a good idea. We'll just sit on that a bit and see where it pans out. And I think sometimes time and patience is the biggest
issue.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, I like what you've just said there, because as well, I just get frustrated with waiting for the internet to load. Can you imagine if you had to use dial-up, how you used to have back in the day?
Oh, that was awful. And you couldn't use a phone, could you? Like waiting for a phone call or, yeah, it was. But no, I do think patience is definitely key to a lot. Just in life. And I am very chilled and relaxed, so it's easy for me to say that. Generally speaking, you'll struggle to offend me, you will struggle to upset me, because that's fine, it's just fine, it's all good.
Is there a particular sort of mantra or quote you live by then? You know, you're very chilled, you compartmentalise things, you know, is there something specific that sticks out in your head of something that you live by?
I mean, one thing that I tend to use now is sort of, you know, whatever's for you won't pass you by. And I've had a few conversations about that with like a friend of mine, because she says, I disagree. She says, because there's got to be an element of hard work. You can't just sit there and wait for things to land on your lap. And I thought, well, no, she's right, you can't. But I do think that there's, you know, if it's right, it will keep coming back in some way, shape or form.
Yes.
So I do think that there's an element to that. And I just think, you know, the other thing is, and this is from Barb Brown, which I've not heard of this till, but it's just that proceed till apprehended.
Yeah.
You know, I just think that is really good in every way, shape or form. Just think, do you know what? Just try it.
Yeah.
Give it a go. And I do often sort of say the same to my boys, is that just try it. Give it a go. See what happens. And then, you know, suck it and see.
I love both of those and live by both of those. Well, I try and live by the latter. Yeah. It's a great leadership skill to learn as well.
Yeah.
And how's that worked for you and your team?
Really good. So I think they now, I try and encourage them to, like I say, try things, test things out, whether that be small things, small changes, bigger projects, working towards it. And we've all come to terms with the fact that we're going to fail at times, and that that's okay. It's a learning curve. We're all very good that if we sort of say to ourselves when we're trying new things, if we get up on that morning, say we've got a session, I don't know, on a Tuesday afternoon, if we're waking up on a Tuesday morning with that fear and dread in our stomach, it's not right.
Yeah.
There's something not right about it. So I think that's generally, we feel a lot more confident in saying, yeah, we've done that. We didn't particularly find it useful or enjoyable. Feedback's not been great. We're not doing it. And that's lovely to have that flexibility and, like you say, that autonomy, because essentially nobody knows our service better than we do, and our service users particularly. So it's about working with them and trying it. Yeah, giving it a go.
What's next for you then in this new role for your new teams?
Do you know what? I really don't know, because I'll be honest, I've got so much to learn about the other services, because it's really strange. I've worked alongside Dawn and Claire Well, since they started, really, we've been in a supportive care team. But to try and look at it from that different perspective is really challenging. And I thought, you know what? I don't know a lot about counselling at all. It's not something I've ever received. It's not something I've ever really been involved in. The reality is I don't need to, because that's what Dawn's there for.
Yeah.
But to learn more about the services and how they, you know, what they're doing, what their aspirations are for the future, how they want it to go. Just because you can't advocate for service and a team if you don't know what you're advocating for. So I'm in the process of sort of booking time and spending time with people and learning. So yeah, it's all just a lot of learning, and no doubt there'll be an awful lot more coming my way as well. So, but that's my priority at the minute, is to sort of think, right, what do they need from me and how can I support them?
Another great leadership skill as well is that you don't need to be there to do it all, because that's, like I say, what your job expert's for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. And place your trust in them continuing to do what they're doing.
Exactly. You know, they're obviously very good at what they're doing, and that's fine, and they know more about it than I ever will. So it's just knowing, what can I do to help? What can I do to support? And I like sustainability. I think we've got to make sure that whatever we're offering is sustainable and fits the purpose. And you know, times are hard financially. We've got to try and make the job, we're getting as much as we can for his money and things like that. So, yeah, that's what I'm hopefully going to support them with. And I'm sure there'll be loads more.
It's very exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is exciting. It's quite daunting as well, because it's sort of, there's lots of things that I'll be involved in that I've never been involved in before. And like I say, I am an open book. I can't hide the fact that I'm worried about it. So if I walk, I'm not one of these people that can walk into a meeting and bluff my way through, because I can't do it. It's just, if I don't know, I don't know. But you don't know until you've experienced it. You don't know, do you? You've got to learn.
Exactly. Going back to what you said earlier about, you know, it's okay to fail.
Mm-hmm.
So Laura G, the organisational development lead, has an acronym for that. So FAIL is first attempt in learning.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's true.
Yeah, very true. Yeah, it is. When you look back and think, what are the chances of you getting something right the first time? Slim to nil, aren't they? So, yeah, it's pretty standard now that we just give it a go and see how it works.
And all the best for the new role and for your new journey. I'd love to catch up with you again 6 months down the line.
Yes, yeah, definitely. That would be good just to see.
Thank you so much for talking to us and being the open book that you are. I could talk to you all day.
Thank you for having me. I do appreciate it.
You're very welcome. You've been listening to the Break Room podcast by Ashgate Hospice, and I've been your host, Kirsty. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you again next time.